I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Rome and Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 p.m.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we start off in Yeovil. Now, Yeovil, as you know, is an old historic town, and we're going to be visiting the Banjo Paterson Museum, who's run by Alf Cantrell. Now, Alf is a wealth of information where Banjo Paterson's concerned. He also runs the campground there, and he also runs the fabulous coffee shop Clancy's, which is in the Banjo Paterson Museum, where you can get coffees, scones, and fabulous hamburgers. And straight after that, we'll be in Gilgandra at the Gilgandra Rural Museum.
That's right. And we take the time and chat to Max at the Rural Museum and Historical Society.
Right.
Now, this museum, it's run by volunteers.
Okay.
And it's open every day, excluding Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And you can wander around. There's so much to see and do. And also, too, Gilgandra is home of the Cooey March.
Cooey March? What's the Cooey March?
Well, that was back from World War One,
right?
Where they started off,
okay,
and they did this march from Gilgandra all the way to Sydney, collecting all those that wanted to go and serve for our country.
Cooey.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And also, too, around Gilgandra, you'll find lots of windmills around town. So
yes,
it's a nice little town to visit,
it
actually.
Is. Oh, look, I love Gilgandra. It's a beautiful place. And Max was so nice to us.
Yes, he was. So, yes, there's a lot to see and do there.
Absolutely. And don't forget, cooey. And straight after that, I'm going to be chatting with Jeff Diaf, our regular on the program. He's going to be talking us through fifth wheelers. So before we start the show, I want to actually play a song for our good friend Mr. Alf Cantrell. And it's a Banjo Paterson song that was popularised by Slim Dusty, and it's called Clancy of the Overflow. So apart from all these fabulous interviews, I've also got this great selection of songs as requested by the people we interview. So what do you reckon, Lynn?
On with the show!
I had written him a letter, which I had, for want of better knowledge, sent to where I met him down the Loughlin years ago. He was shearing when I knew him, so I sent the letter to him, just on spec, addressed as follows: Clancy of the Overflow. And an answer came directed in a writing unexpected, and I think the same was written with a thumbnail dipped in tar. 'Twas his shearing mate who wrote it, and verbatim I will quote it: Clancy's gone to Queensland roving, and we don't know where he are. In my wild erratic fancy, visions come to me of Clancy gone a-droving down the Cooper, where the western drovers go. As the stock are slowly stringing, Clancy rides behind them singing, for the drover's life is pleasures that the town folk never know. And the bush has friends to meet him, and their kindly voices greet him in the murmur of the breezes and the river on its buzz. And he sees the vision splendid of the sunlit plains extended, and at night the wondrous glory of the everlasting stars. And in place of lowing cattle, I can hear the fiendish rattle of the tramways and the buses making hurry down the street. And the language uninviting of the gutter children fighting comes fitfully and faintly through the ceaseless tramp of feet. And the hurrying people daunt me, and their pallid faces haunt me, as they shoulder one another in their rush and nervous haste. With their eager eyes and greedy, and their stunted forms and weedy,
For town folk have no time to grow, they have no time to waste. And I somehow rather fancy that I'd like to change with Clancy, like to take a turn at roving where the seasons come and go. While he faced the round eternal of the cash book and the journal, but I doubt he'd suit the office, Clancy of the overflow. In my wild erratic fancy, visions come to me of Clancy gone a-droving down the Cooper where the western drovers go. As the stock are slowly stringing, Clancy rides behind them singing, for the drover's life has pleasures that the town folk never know.
Hello listeners, Phil C here, and I'm in Yeovil, and we are at the Banjo Patterson Museum with Alf Cantrell. Now, Alf is the curator of the museum. How are you, Alf?
Going extremely well, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today, my friend.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It is. It's a pleasure for us to be here. Now, we were here about two, three years ago, and I spent about 4 hours in this wonderful museum. Tell us all about the museum for the listeners that haven't been to Yeovil before.
The Banjo Patterson Museum is located in Yeovil because this is where Banjo Patterson spent his childhood,
right,
in Yeovil, which in those days was called Buchenbach.
Okay.
And every town needs something, small village or town, to attract people to come to it so they don't die, to keep the cash flow going through the main street.
Okay.
We only have about 4 shops in the main street and we have a lot of through traffic. But pull them up and slow them down, what can we do? So we opened a museum for Banjo Patterson.
Okay. So what would the population of Yeovil be? Because it is a small town, you said.
About 260.
About 260. Okay. Okay. And so how long have you been the curator?
Since it opened, that's 7 years.
Okay. Rightio. And all the exhibits in here, did you put these together? Were a lot of things donated by local people?
Quite a few things were donated, not necessarily by locals,
mm-hmm,
but the majority of them I either had or we have purchased since we opened.
Okay, okay. Now, I understand, because we were here about 2 or 3 years ago, you got a brand new bronze statue out the front, is that correct?
Yes,
at Banjo Patterson?
We do have a new bronze statue. It was unveiled only 2 weeks ago.
Okay, 2 weeks ago. Incredible. Now, what about this hat across the road? Because the day I pulled up, it was raining, and I saw this fellow, which I thought was a fellow sitting in a wheelchair in the rain. It's actually meant to be Banjo sitting there with a pipe in his mouth?
It's the swagman.
Okay, all right.
It's the swagman, Andy. Andy sang as he watched Andy waited till his billy bull. It's
Andy. Ah, okay.
Well, he's under the big Cobra Banjo Patterson hat.
He is indeed. I saw the hat as we were driving to the museum, and it was raining slightly, and from a distance I actually thought it was a real person in the wheelchair getting wet.
He doesn't talk a lot.
No.
Gosh, he's a good listener.
He's a hell of a good listener. I agree with that. So for people who come to the museum, I was here, as I said, a couple of years ago, and I spent at least 3 or 4 hours in there. What do you think the minimum time would be?
Minimum time would probably be an hour.
Okay.
The people spend in there. Some people come back tomorrow,
mm-hmm,
and spend more time in there, those that are more deeply interested in Banjo Patterson.
Yeah.
The majority of people are amazed at the fact that he did so many things in his lifetime. He's known as the author of Waltzing Matilda,
right,
and the author of The Man from Snowy River and Clancy the Overflow. And to most people, that's the end of the Banjo Patterson story. But of course, he did so many things in his lifetime, from being a winning jockey in Sydney to working with horse-drawn ambulances on the Western Front during the First World War.
Yes, yes.
To being the assistant vet as he took the horses across, 7,000 horses, to Egypt,
mm-hmm,
for the Allied forces.
Yep.
To being a Boer War correspondent, to being a solicitor in Sydney for many, many years.
Yes.
Captain of the Australian, the New South Wales polo team, and captain of the New South Wales tennis team.
Wow, I didn't know that. I knew a lot of it, and I'm a bit of a banjo tragic myself. That was what brought us here, so I didn't realise that. Tennis as well.
Tennis, and he played a mean game of cricket as well, and golf.
Okay, all right, there you go. Well, we've obviously come to the right place to find out about Banjo Patterson, that's for sure, Alf. Now, tell us a little bit about the park that's directly opposite, because you've got several sculptors across there.
Yeah, when we started to promote Banjo Patterson in Yeovil, we ran a festival every year called the Mulga Bill Festival.
Yes.
And the Mulga Bill Festival ran once a year and attracted up to about 7,000 people.
Okay.
It was a long weekend, probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
And but the problem was it was only once a year.
Okay.
And that was when we decided we needed something to attract people every day of the year.
Yep.
So we started off cleaning up that park opposite, which was absolutely a tip when we started. It belongs to the Lands Department.
Right.
And we mowed it, we cleaned it up, and we got several grants to level it, move the rocks about and do everything there. And then every time we did something in town that raised money to improve our community, which was what the festival did, build toilets, etc., etc., plant trees, we always left something, and we left a sculpture.
Okay.
And we had that sculpture specially made for, you know, the new year, 2014, 2015,
2016,
etc., etc.
And so on, yep. Alrighty. Now, you've obviously been living in Yeovil for a little while to be the curator of the museum. Were you born here? Are you
a
local?
No, I'm not a local. Goodness me, no, I'm not a local.
You're not a local?
No, I've only been here for about 36 years, 37 years. And the locals don't consider that to be a local.
So 37 years. How do you become a local in Yeovil?
Well, I've always said you either have to be born here or marry your cousin.
Okay, marry your cousin. So what do the locals think about an answer like that?
Well, they're not very happy about it, but it is so true in Yeovil.
It's very humorous, Alf. You've got a great sense of humour, my friend. Now, one other thing, apart from it being a museum and an extremely interesting one, listeners, as I said, I was here a few years ago and spent 3 or 4 hours here and would have spent longer, but we just had to keep moving along. You've also got this great cafe called Clancy's. Tell us a little bit about the cafe.
Well, the cafe here, Clancy's Cafe, is purposely built in the front of the museum as part of it.
Right.
And people come, as you said, and they spend a bit of time and they might sit down and have a cup of coffee, then go back into the museum. And it's the cafe that generates the monies that pay the day-to-days on the museum, because you've charged people $3 or $5 to go into the museum. That doesn't pay for your electricity and your rates and your water, etc., etc.
Okay.
So that's the purpose of that, and we keep everything very much to a minimum. You can buy a beautiful hamburger here for $5.
Which is, look, and we've just had a beautiful cappuccino and some lovely scones. And great quality of food, very, very affordable for the travel.
And Devon's UT would have cost $6.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
Good value.
Good value for money. And you've also got a great camping area down here, which is absolutely fantastic value for money. Tell us a little bit about that.
The camping area is run by the Show Society.
Right.
And it's a means of generating money for the Show Society. We were fortunate enough some years ago to get a grant to build the facilities down there, which are better than home.
Right.
And then people can come and they can stay for 1 day or 2 days or 5 days, whatever they like, and use it as their centre for travelling around, or just to spend an evening in Yeovil.
Yep.
And it's on the showground. It has power, very good toilets and showers, and is an ideal place for anyone to stay.
And how much is that now?
It's only $15 a night.
$15 a night.
Regardless of how many you have.
Okay. As long as you don't bring 12 kids and 18 dogs.
Well, we'll put a stop at the dogs to start with.
Okay, fair enough.
We don't mind people bringing dogs, but there is something on our website, I think, that says 3 days maximum.
Yep.
And that's to cover ourselves for people who bring 18 dogs and 3 motor cars and just make a nuisance to themselves.
And make a nuisance and decide they want to move in at $15 a night. Showers, hot water, great facilities. Tell us, lastly, that's this festival that you mentioned before, is that still running or no?
No, it's not. No.
It's been finished up.
It has finished up, and we are now running this.
Yes.
And we the Rotary Club in Orange started then running a festival called the Banjo Patterson Australian Poets Festival.
Ah, okay.
And it's run in February every year.
Okay.
Of course, we are one of the people at the voluntary help to run it. And
yes.
We put on a function here every year.
Right.
During that festival. And we have a poetry day and a what we call a Banjo Patterson's brunch.
Okay.
We put on here every year in February.
Mm-hmm.
But the Orange, being a much larger centre than us,
yeah,
are able to do more.
Okay.
And they run a very big children's program for teaching and educating children on poetry every year with guest poets.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Alf. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. Yes, I'm going to ask you now, because we're just about to wind this one up, I've got to play you a song. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer?
I certainly do.
Okay.
Are there more than one?
Oh, well, it depends who you ask. It depends. That you definitely don't look like an AC/DC sort of a man, so who would be your favourite, Alf?
There is only one Australian singer, in my opinion, that produces absolutely magnificent music and magnificent lyrics, and that is Slim Dusty.
Slim Dusty, definitely one of the greats, that's for sure. So what about a favourite Slim song?
Walk a Country Mile.
Walk a Country Mile. Thank you so much, Alf, for taking the time to talk to us. It's been a pleasure for us to be here and for you to take some time with us. Absolutely great. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for coming to Yeovil. It's been a pleasure having you.
All right. There you go, listeners. The town is called Yeovil. It's the Banjo Patterson Museum. Make sure you come and talk to Alf and Alf Cantrell. Now, it's only about an hour to Dubbo or Parks from here, so even if you don't want to stay in Yeovil, it's not that far to come just for a day trip.
An hour also to Orange.
Yes.
So it's really in the centre.
Okay.
And it is by far the nicest facilities in all of those areas.
Well, there you go, folks. You got it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Alf Cantrell, Banjo Patterson Museum. We're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after that song, Walk a Country Mile.
Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Now a country mile would be the longest distance a man could ever travel when he's down. And you curse the never-ending road before you when you think you'll never make it into town. But you meet a friend or two along the highway, and you learn a lot you never knew before. And if the journey takes a lifetime when you thought a year or two, well, you just don't give up easy anymore. And I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Walking that long mile has shown me changes, changes in the people and the land. But I'll bet the road to Marble Bar's no better than when I drove with trucks and caravans. And the country bloke is still the same old peddler, no matter what the place he's working in. And although I've covered many miles, I still can't wait to see what the next country mile will bring. Well, I've walked a mile or two in my lifetime, and I've traveled down some muddy tracks and dry. 'Cause if I wanted to get where I was going, I knew I'd just have to walk that country mile. Yes, I knew I'd have to walk that country mile.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here with Lynn, and we're at Gilgandra, and we are at
the
Gilgandra
Museum. All right.
Okay, and I'm with Max. How are you today, Max?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So can you tell us a little bit about the Gilgandra Museum?
The Gilgandra Museum originally started quite a long time ago, but then it came into this building here, or that building there, in 1996, and it was opened, and it's been extended 3 times to fit things in.
Yes.
And there's, you know, many more things that could come in that relate to the Gilgandra area that aren't in there. Probably with a little bit of reorganisation we can add more to it, but it's certainly a very interesting museum. The cross section, we've got very rare tractors in there. We've got a printing press from down the street here, the old lead, I forget what you call it, but anyway, everything was made with lead before they printed.
Right.
There's an old telephone exchange with the cords on it, where when you rang in you put the cord in.
Yes.
There's many telephones. It's great to get children in here because they, how do you operate that phone?
Exactly. And how do I get YouTube on that?
Yeah, exactly. It's a wonderful education. Then to see the buggies and the horses, there's actually solid horses being bought to put in front of the buggies. There's another one in a sloping thing that the horse walks all the time, and that drives the cleaning machine to clean wheat. Grains. Look, it just goes on and on what you can see here.
A lot of things that, you know, children now would not know about, like, as you said, the telephones. And I did hear that there was an old cooktop in there, a wood-fired stove and everything else. So
there is.
Yes.
The old chip heaters for heating the water before to put in the bathtub.
Yeah. No, that, yes.
You know, they're here and they're set up in the room just down the side there. And it's set up as a little hospital there. There's actually an old birthing bed in there from the days. And a lot of the tools and equipment that the doctors used in the earlier days. Then you go around a little bit further and there's a school that's been brought in from out near Turrawina, built many, many years ago. It's got the old long desks in there. And the
inkwells
is where you put the pens on the front of it.
I remember those desks from, that's going back a little bit.
My very word it is. When you go on a... Sorry.
No, you're right. Keep going, Max.
Go on a little bit further and, you know, we had a dairy here owned by the Hargraves brothers and a lot of their equipment is there. You know, supplied Gilgandra with all the milk and so forth, and then there's many ale machines, and then you come around into the main museum that we've been talking about.
Right. And I noticed out the front you've got windmills as well that are powering...
the kangaroo and Ned Kelly.
Yes, that's correct. Very clever.
Very clever. Who thought of that, Max?
It's a chap that lived out at Turrawina and in fact, he even built the observatory that's down here. Very clever farmer. And he and my dad did a lot of work here together. They just suited each other and they certainly did a lot of work here. But that Howard Rotary Hoe out there, my great uncle was the man that first built the first one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Cliff Howard.
Oh, okay.
My mother was a Howard and her father's brother was Cliff Howard.
So you've been in this area for quite a while then, obviously.
The longest I've been away from Gilgandra is 6 weeks.
Really?
So you were born in Gilgandra, mate?
Yes.
And lived here all your life with the exception of 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And also, too, I noticed that you've got a couple of posters with regards to the Kooee March, which Gilgandra's famous for.
Exactly.
Back in 1915, I think it was, where 35 soldiers
finished up in Sydney. 26 left here.
Yeah, oh, 26.
And they kept joining them as they went down. Some of them went to the ball the night before they left, and they thought, oh, we're going to join this. So they went home, got their gear, and caught up with them. Out along the road somewhere.
Oh, right.
And once again, Cliff Howard's and my grandfather's brother was finished up marching with them in Sydney.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. That what you're pointing out there now is that they were raising money to build a hospital here in Gilgandra.
Right.
And they, if you wrote on there, put your name on there, it cost you sixpence.
Oh, right. Right.
In other words, 5 cents these days.
Yeah.
And then a lady crocheted the whole lot. Do you call it crochet?
Oh.
Anyway, she stitched the whole lot.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, embroidery.
Embroidered, that's the word.
Oh, so it's an embroidered, I guess it's a sheet or a blanket, isn't it?
It's a sheet.
It's the size of a bed sheet.
Yes.
Wow.
And if you could only get all the names, you'd know how many sixpences they raised. But
wow.
That was a minimum. And then next to that you can see the Lloyd Middleton thing there. He went to school in Gilgandra here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And not long. But, you know, we've had quite a few people go to war from here.
Yes.
And, you know, away from here, there's a lot of other things that you can visit in Gilgandra.
There is, right? Okay.
What would you suggest, Max?
Yes.
Well, for our listeners.
It's regarded as the town of windmills.
Yes.
And we're known for the windmills. And you understand a windmill is designed to bring up the sub-artesian water.
Correct, yes.
So before a town water system was here, we had they drew either rainwater tank or bore water.
Right.
And then down along the road there, well, it's actually the windmill walk. Goes from the Cooey Heritage Centre right down to the main street along the riverbank.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did notice that.
Yes. Yes, okay. And then we've got the Cactus World.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about down along this road. That's the biggest collection of cacti in, I think, the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
Okay. He exports cactuses all over the world.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then you go down further and the observatory, unfortunately, we're talking about the chap that worked up here. He built that.
Right.
But it's not open anymore.
No.
Hopefully someone will come along
and open it.
And then you've got the main street. There's lots of other things to see in Gilgandra, the sites of the old sawmill. We had three sawmills once upon a time. A flour mill, which closed down and then burnt in the later years. And let me think, out on a road, we've got what's called a corduroy road.
Right.
Do you understand a corduroy road?
No.
Well, not at all.
It travels from the village Kirban west. And in the days of the Cobb and Co. coaches on the black soil plains,
right,
when it got wet, the coaches would bog.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So they cut and laid white cypress trees side by side for miles.
Oh, okay. So that the coach could go across.
So the coach wouldn't bog.
Oh, wow.
And used only in the wet time, of course, mm-hmm, because it was quite rough. But it got through.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another experience we had, we've got the opposite, just up here where the grain receival businesses are. We had a corduroy road there because it was raw sand and the wagons loaded with goods would bog in the raw sands. We went to the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Because it was too dry.
Yes.
Yep.
You laid a corduroy road there.
Oh. So that's probably where the name for corduroy fabric came from, is it?
Could have been. Could have very easily been.
Well, there you go.
I don't know the answer. We've got what's called the Berrida Wool Shed.
Yes.
That you can ring up and make an appointment and go out and see the old shed. Very old.
Mm-hmm.
There are photos of it here somewhere. I just can't see one quickly.
Mm.
But Gilgandra is an old area, although we're not the first town settled on the Castlereagh River, Mindurin was.
Okay.
Right.
And then even this little village I talked about, Kirban, was settled before Gilgandra.
Mm. Okay.
But then we're known for mixed farming.
Yes.
You know, grains,
yep,
sheep, cattle.
Cattle, yeah.
Goats are coming in now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And I don't know. There's a lot of other things you can see.
So if someone was to come to the museum, how long would they need to take?
Well, some people go through in 15 minutes. Yep. Other people go through in 3 hours. It depends how you want to study, because a lot of the things have a little
story to them
that you can go and stand there and read.
Yep.
Okay.
And very interesting
to
read all that, and you'll see the names of the people in the Gilgandra area, and as far as Walbert and that sort of thing, that they've donated things to the museum so that people can see them.
All right, well, that sounds very fascinating, Max. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us all about the museum. Now, we're going to play an Aussie song for you. Who would you like us to play?
Oh, let's have the Seekers.
Yes.
And the carnival is over.
Okay, I'm sure Phil will have that.
Absolutely, Len. I can do that. The Seekers, the carnival is over. Max, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been really great for us to be here. And I hope lots of listeners come through. When they come in through the area, they pop in and see you.
Yes, well, we do too. It's a very interesting town. Yes. We're known as a friendly town.
Yes.
So, been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, there are several free camps in Gilgandra, aren't there, for overnight stay?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, well, the council will actually be developing one between the museum here and the Kooi Heritage Centre.
Okay,
there'll
fantastic.
Be 10 sites there.
Very fantastic. Good.
There, you know, no services provided.
No?
Okay.
But this free camp is just across the road at the 40s or
yes.
the bowling club there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one up at the Railway Hotel.
Yes.
And down the main street, the Royal Hotel. There's a small area there where
yes.
people can free camp.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be a very RV friendly town.
Well, I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you'll get more people here.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Now stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after the carnival is over.
Roman Oz, and we're at that segment again, and we're speaking again with Mr. Jeff Diath from Checkweight. Now, what's the topic for this week, Jeff? We didn't mention anything last week. What have we got up your sleeve today?
Well, Phil, when we were talking off air after last week, you mentioned that you've seen a few fifth wheelers
indeed
on the road for
yes.
travels.
Yes, indeed.
So I thought we'd just touch on fifth wheelers and how they're different to caravans.
Fantastic.
Fantastic,
mate. You know what? You must have been reading my mind, because I was going to ask you if we could bring it into the program at some stage after our little discussion last week. And great stuff. great, great stuff, because there are more and more of these vehicles appearing on the road. So tell us as much as you can about fifth wheelers. Do you weigh them firstly?
Look, Phil, I haven't weighed very many. I think I've weighed three.
Okay.
When I've weighed over 500 caravan and vehicle combinations, three is a pretty small number.
Yep.
So I'm not going to profess to be an expert on fifth wheelers. And there's definitely pluses and minuses for fifth wheelers.
Yep.
But the few that I have weighed were a bit interesting from that point of view.
Okay. Interesting in what sense? Because I'm always, I mean, if we're talking a truck, are we talking, when you say fifth wheelers, because I've seen different combinations of fifth wheelers. I've seen people with a truck, and I've seen probably more with a ute-style vehicle that's still got that same hitch on it. So you're talking interesting as in people that are trying to drag a fifth wheeler with a ute or a truck. What do you mean?
Look, I just think it was what happened was that you can't call it a tow ball weight, but it's the hitch weight.
Yes.
Was a lot higher than they anticipated.
Okay.
And if you if you're not aware of what a fifth wheeler is, it's more like a semi trailer setup.
It is. Yes.
excuse me. But it, so it does give you some inherent better stability than towing the a caravan.
Yep.
You've got the weight instead of the weight of the tow ball impacting on the tow bar behind the axle of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The hitch is over or just in front of the rear axle of the vehicle.
Right.
So we don't have that multiplication, that 1.5 times that I've referred to before.
Okay.
You know, if you've got a tow ball weight of 300, you're putting 450 on the rear axle.
Yes.
However, what I found was those two or three that I've weighed, that the hitch weight was way, way heavier than what the clients anticipated it being. In actual fact, one of them was about 650 kilos.
Wow.
He was towing it with a Ford F-250, I think it was.
Okay.
And to get the weight of the hitch, because, you can't just use a tow ball weigher because it's so high, we weighed the vehicle unhitched and weighed the vehicle hitched. So that gives us our actual weight.
Okay. So
does that make sense?
It does. It does. I'm a little confused, though, because, you always sort of estimate that your ball weight, if we're speaking of a caravan, is around about 10% of what the caravan weighs, don't you? So if you've got a 3-ton caravan, the rule of thumb is your tow ball is going to be somewhere around 300. Is that correct? Which puts 450 onto your rear axle.
Yep.
So if you've got a fifth wheeler that has, a GVM of 3,500, why would you have, say, was that a really heavy rig that guy was pulling with 600 or?
Well, all of fifth wheelers tend to be heavy. There's no small fifth wheelers that I've seen.
Okay.
They're all pretty up there in, the 3-ton, 3.5-ton.
Okay. But if you've got a 3.5-ton caravan, for example, or a fifth wheeler, I keep saying caravan, fifth wheeler, would it be fair to say that a guesstimate would be 350 on that hitch point on the back of the truck or no?
I think that's probably what people do estimate, but in the couple that I've done, it's not. It's much heavier.
And I guess this is the confusing part, because if you get a fifth, if you get a fifth wheeler that's 4-ton, you still shouldn't end up with 600 on the hitch point. Should you? Well, was it the way he had it loaded? What was the actual reason for that?
Well, if you look at the profile of a fifth wheeler, the wheels are well set back.
They are.
Then all your storage is in the front.
Okay. So, yes.
Yeah. So it's naturally going to be heavy at the front.
Okay.
And when you the same thing as you look at a compliance plate and might say 300 hitch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All your storage is in the front under the bed, in the box under the bed, things like that.
Yes.
So again, you need to be pretty aware of how much weight you're putting where, and what effect is that is having on the vehicle. Because if your hitch is 600, then it's no real difference from a tow ball weight, although it will be inherently more stable than what a caravan will be.
More stable, yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, if he was using an F-250, was he in trouble? Was it like he's overweight, or what was the end result to that chap? Because, I mean, an F-250, that's a big rig in itself.
Yeah, the problem with the F-250s, it's another probably podcast but or interview, is that, you know, they don't have a big payload because they're downgraded so that you don't need a light rigid license.
Okay.
But the benefit, I suppose, is that you don't then have a whole heap of gear loaded into the tray of the vehicle.
Okay.
So you're not adding all that weight as well to the rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a fifth wheeler, you've got that hitch arrangement, so you don't get to use the tray as storage.
Okay, so the tray of the, and an F-250's got a mighty big tray.
Yeah.
And you're saying that pretty much all that space is unusable because of the weight of the hitch on the F-250.
Well, it, you know, it's the space you need. You can't put a whole.
You can't put a whole leap in it. No, because you need that turning area, don't you?
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the disadvantages of a fifth wheeler. But inherently, they are more stable. And when you talk to people who tow with a fifth wheeler, they love them.
Okay.
But because they are more stable, but you've got more storage in the caravan, so you've got to be aware of your weight limits in the caravan. Because that's where you're putting everything, because you don't have available in the vehicle.
And the thing with the fifth wheelers too is that they are really a house on wheels. And I mean, their water tanks, their water holding capacity is much greater than a caravan. And you've got this massive black tank for your black water that you don't have in a caravan. You've only got those tiny little cassettes for the, you know, for the toilet. Whereas most fifth wheelers have probably got 100 litres of holding capacity for the black tank, wouldn't they?
I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, they're all different, but they're a much bigger rig.
Yep.
And designed for a different purpose, really.
Yes, indeed. But they are becoming more and more popular. I did see a guy towing a fifth wheeler, and I'm not sure if we've mentioned this earlier in any of our chats, but the guy was actually towing it with an old fire engine. And it was yes, he was parked in the showground. I'm trying to think where it was. And he had an old fire engine, so he had, and he was carrying 2,000 litres of water in the fire engine. And he had this massive black tank on the back of the old fire engine that he used to pump his black out, because obviously if he was staying somewhere for a prolonged period, he would pump it off the fifth wheeler into the tank on the back of the fire engine and then drive the fire engine to the dump point. So it was a massive setup. I've never seen anything like it in my life. But he said he bought that thing. He was an ex-truck driver, and he said, look, it's great that these people have all this towing capacity, but the one thing that 90% of people don't even bother to take into consideration is their stopping capacity. You know, you'll get somebody with a 3.5-ton caravan and they're pulling it behind your, you know, your Land Cruiser with absolute, and it pulls it with like with no effort. You know, they're great to tow. But then the old truck driver fellow with the fire engine said, yeah, fabulous, but then you've got to try and stop the blasted thing in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
And this is where these things do come unstuck, you know what I mean? So he said, I never have an effort stopping any of this with a fire engine. So, yeah, bit extreme, but at least he knew he was going to travel in comfort, not have any effort, no issue, no nothing out there, you know what I mean? So
it probably had a fair bit of water tank capacity on the fire engine as well.
Well, he did. He had 2,000 litres. That's what I said. He had these two tanks that just came with the old X fire engine, and that was 2,000 litres of water. So he's never going to run out of water, that's for sure. Okay, so anything else about the fifth wheeler, Jeff, that you want to mention? Because we've never discussed fifth wheelers before, and I think they are an important vehicle to mention, because there are more and more people now travelling on the road, living on the road, which is why I'm seeing more fifth wheelers, because they are so comfortable. You can live in these things. You've got a slide out, and it is. It's like a small house on wheels.
Absolutely. And I think, they are, from what I've been told, inherently more stable.
Okay.
And you have more room.
Yes.
Just, be aware that what is on the compliance plate about the hitch weight mm-hmm. will be dramatically increased. So go back to, thinking about where you're going to store things and how that's going to affect the weight.
Uh-huh.
Like any normal caravan, be aware of what you pack.
That's the most important thing, isn't it? And I suppose people thinking, hey, I've got a fifth wheeler, I've got an F-250, I can put 10 tonnes of rubbish in here that I'm never going to use, but not the case.
No, and I think, I wrote a blog about rams, and, I really think the only way a Ram 1500 can comfortably tow 4.5 tonnes is if it's in a fifth wheel situation.
Okay.
Because if you watch, there's a TV program called Heartland that is all about horses in Canada.
Yes.
And we were watching that when I first started this weighing gig. And every single F-250 or Ram 1500 is towing horses. Yep. It's all fifth wheels in Canada.
Okay.
So it's very, very few were towing normal horse floats.
Okay.
And they were having, 3 or 4 horses in these big horse floats.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at towing with a fifth wheeler, make sure that you get the vehicle that's appropriate for it as well.
Okay, fabulous. All right, there you go, listeners. Fifth wheelers, make sure you get the appropriate vehicle. Don't just go out and buy yourself a BT50 and get one of those things modified, because you might find yourself in all worlds of trouble. How can we end this segment today, Jeff?
Ah, well, how about we have a song?
Absolutely. We always have a song. They've got to be Aussie. You know the drill now. This is you've been on here now for almost 20 shows, I think.
Oh, well, I'll be getting pretty good at it by now.
Oh, absolutely. So what's your favourite song for today, for the fifth wheeler?
Well, because we were talking about fifth wheelers and a lot of fifth wheelers, horse floats.
Yes.
I thought we'd have The Horses by Darryl Braithwaite.
Ah, fabulous choice. Yeah, The Horses. How appropriate. Fifth wheelers pulling horse floats. There you go, listeners. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today, mate. And any idea what we're going to discuss next week?
Oh, look, we just touched on trucks and motorhomes and things like that. But why don't we talk about motorhome weights?
Motorhome weights. Fabulous. There you go, listeners. If you're travelling in a motorhome, we'll be discussing that on next week's program. Jeff, thank you so much for today. And you stay safe, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe and enjoy.
There you go, listeners. Stick around for Darryl Braithwaite's The Horses, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
Situation should keep us separated. You know the world won't fall apart, and you will free the beautiful bird that's caught inside your heart. Can't you hear her? She cries so loud, cast a wild note over water. Until you go, I
I'll be right there by your side. And even then, whisper the wind, and she will carry up your right. I hear all the people of the world, in one bird's lonely cry. See them trying every way they know how to make their spirit fly. Can't you see him? He's down on the ground, so broken wing, looking all around. That's the way it's gonna be, little darling. You go riding on the horses, yeah, yeah. Way up in the sky, little darling. Oh, and if you fall, pick you up, pick you up. That's the way it's gonna be, little darling. You go riding on the horses, yeah, yeah. Way up in the sky, little darling. And if you fall, pick you up, pick you up.
That's the way it's gonna be, little darling. You go riding on the horses, yeah,
pick
yeah.
You up,
way up in the sky, little darling.
Don't you worry about it, baby.
And if you fall, I'll pick you up.
Oh, well, there you go, folks. What do you think of that one? Darryl Braithwaite's Horses. Well, I'm going to play one more song, and it's all about horses, okay, folks, just to wind up this afternoon of Roman Oz. Now, we started with Banjo Paterson because we were at the museum there in Yeovil. One of my favourites, Clancy of the Overflow. But my absolute favourite poem by a banjo and popularised by Slim is a number called The Man from Snowy River.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight. For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison, who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, and the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse or man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins, for never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. And he learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of time or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay. And the old man said, "That horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you.
So he waited sad and wistful, lonely Clancy stood his friend. Oh, I think we ought to let him come, he said. And I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end, for both his horse and he a mountain bred. Oh, he hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the Flintstones every stride, and the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home, where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but no way yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, they found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go at 'em from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right, and ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight, if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them, he was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with his stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-beloved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stock whips woke the echoes and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way where Currajong and Mountain Ash grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, we may bid the mob good day. No man could hold them down the other side. When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes, and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the Flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. Oh, he cleared the fallen timber in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride through the stringy box and saplings on the rough and broken ground. Down the hillside at a racing pace he went, and he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of the terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. Oh, but a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur, but his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and rugged battlements on high,
where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky. And where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide. Oh, the man from Snowy River is a household word today, and stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.